I promised Guy that I would do nothing to embarrass him, and I know he
has access to heavy weapons. Pretty hard to embarrass
him. How did you get that? Because Mike, every time he tries to embarrass me.
Well, you have to go toe-to-toe with him. You just
So we have a long history. So there's I've learned my lessons, and I know when to back away. And
well, Guy, thanks so much for making time for us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm happy to plug in. I'm not so sure your listeners won't look at it and say that's an hour I'll never get back. But whatever this is worth.
I'll tell you what, you've got stories, Guy, and I could sit and just listen for hours, but yeah. I want to kind of dive in.
I'm not going to tell on the air. Trust me.
No, but I want to kind of dive into your background a little bit. I know you served 2 combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. I remember the stories. Well, I happen to know you and Chris from a long time ago. And so I'll tell everybody right now, I've stolen at least one of my favorite sayings that stayed with me forever. And my kids always laugh when I tell them. But I want you to kind of get into it because I want you to talk about persistence. And I think there's probably nobody on the planet that understands that concept more than you. And tenacity, which I think is kind of a natural attribute with you, starting way back with your wrestling days in high school. All right, we're recording.
With over 50 years and millions of worldwide traveled miles between the two of us, we have tasted defeat and relished in sweet, sweet victory. Looking for inspirational entertainment, motivation, and practical insights to drive your business? Welcome to the Selling Podcast. Welcome back to the Selling Podcast. If you did not hear last week's interview, you need to go back and listen to that one first. We are joined with one of the greatest people I have ever met. We're on with Guy Hollingsworth. He is spectacular, a true American hero. We're going to get into his stories, what he's accomplished, but more important, the life lessons that he's teaching. It is fantastic. This is one of the only times on the podcast where I actually got choked up. This is a very serious topic, and the stories that he shares are very real, very sincere, and we really appreciate what he shared with us on the podcast. With that being stated, here's the second half to that interview with Guy Hollingsworth.
Just doesn't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we move back to persistence and tenacity, I do want to ask a question about travel. Now, my travel experience and your travel experience, vastly different for lengths of periods of time. We do have a lot of salespeople who do a travel, who are there gone, whether it's weekly, whether it's multiple weeks in a row. You have a different travel experience where you were gone for sustained periods of time. How does travel work with family? Anything that you found, any tips that you can provide any of our travelers who might do it for a fraction of what you did it for?
Well, as I said early on, when I retired after 41 years, I added up all the time that I was away from my wife. And some of those were short, you know, just a few days at a time, and then a couple of long deployments and everything in between. And surprisingly, and it was surprising to me that when it was all said and done, I'd been away from my wife over 15 years. And I don't say that to sound impressive or to make people feel sorry for me. You can look across the military and find people that have had to do that. At the same time, you can look at families that have gone through some tough separation that's ultimately resulted, unfortunately, in divorce or something ugly on that end because of absence. But for me and for my wife, and I can only speak to my experience, I think reaching out to her as much as I could, even daily if possible, although in a combat zone that's not possible, and keeping her aware of what I'm doing and where I'm at and what's going on and how I'm feeling and that I miss her. And, writing a love note, even after 40 years of marriage, things that let her know that I cared and I missed her. I missed my children. And I think if you're going to be a successful salesperson that puts you on the road, or a military person that puts you away at big chunks of time, you must have a support system at home that does just that, supports you in being gone. Because if you don't have that, sales and the trappings that come with that, which often are some time away, is probably not what you want to do long term. And that might be hard to swallow for somebody that says, this is what I wanted to do my whole life. I wanted to be in advertising. That's what my bachelor's degree is in. And when I finally finished, I couldn't wait to do that, and took a job in north of Manhattan for a company that had an in-house ad firm. It was what I wanted to do. Finally figured it out after all those years of undergraduate work. But my wife was on dialysis at the time, and I accepted the job, never got there. And I was okay with that. And my family came first. I don't know what else to say about it. And they always have. And if my wife hadn't said, look, I want you to do that, I know you could, I know you're decent at doing that, she might've thought that's the only thing you can do. But I think if you don't have both sides being supportive that way, and really making an effort daily, then it doesn't work. Then I think you need to find something else. And I see that all the time. And I just think that's part of the equation for success. And that's a hard pill to swallow for somebody who says, well, this is what I've always wanted to do, and I'll sacrifice my family to be successful. Well, I'm not so sure that's success in my mind.
It dovetails so nicely into what we were previously talking about. I've always wanted to be, I wanted to be a DJ. Like, that's what I wanted. I did broadcasting. Like, that was my dream. And then I realized, well, it's fun. I love it. I love the music. I love talking to people. I wanted to do that. And then I realized what it would take. I realized that it was going to be this sacrifice that I valued, and just, it wasn't going to be worth it. And so I took a turn. That, compared to my basketball experience, I would have done whatever it would take to be on the basketball team. And I was, but then I wanted to do whatever it would take to play on the basketball team. And, you know, looking at, you know, okay, you can be persistent, you can keep fighting for something, but is it the right cause to be fighting for? And basketball, it wasn't, you know, being a DJ, it wasn't. And so I had to make some pretty good pivots, and it takes some pretty good soul searching to come to the realization of, you know what, I might really, really want it. It's just not what's best for me.
But I think there's another component to that too. I think there's the tenacity component that fits into it. And I know, Guy, when you're in Afghanistan, I know what your schedule is like. And you're getting to bed probably midnight or later, and you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning, every morning. And I think there's got to be some kind of routine, something that drives you to do that. That's the part that I wanted to dive into. What was it that was pushing you to keep those crazy hours? Because most people can't survive on 4 hours of sleep at the pace that you were running.
Well, I'm no hero.
I think that would depend on who you talk to.
I literally put down on my notes right here, no, American hero and living legend.
Look, the older I get, the more average I realize I am. But for me, it started as a boy. I never wanted to let my mother down. Did I do it? Yeah, probably I did, often. But I never wanted to do that. And when I got into a place like Iraq and Afghanistan, I looked at the sacrifice, and, you know, this is not a political podcast, and so I don't want to go there. I can go there and take the rest of the day with you, but people ask me often about the politics of Afghanistan and Iraq, and my response generally is, look, I was a soldier, not a politician. But I looked at the sacrifice of good people in those countries, those Muslim nations, who despite what we see and hear in the media, overwhelmingly, these two countries, the people in these countries are just like you and me. They are no different. They don't have much money, but that they're no different. And they want the same things that you and I want. And I saw that and said, you know, it's the least I can do. to try to help the cause. Now, whether your listeners support us being there or not, that's not the issue for right now, but that's what I was called to do. I remember being in Iraq, in southern Iraq, in August, as the director of training for the Iraqi army, spending some time at, I oversaw 22 military Iraqi military facilities and 16 Iraqi military schools. One of them was in southern Iraq. I went down there in August. Now it's hot. It's really hot.
It's a little hot.
Now picture this or envision this. I've got full body armor with all the accoutrements that go on body armor. I've got a 9mm strap to my waist. I've got a long barrel for M4 that I'm packing as well. I've got pads on my knees and my elbows. I've got a Kevlar helmet. I've got goggles on. I've got a shemagh, which is a rag across my face. And I'm packing a ruck that's about 75 pounds. And I'm an old man at this point. I'm a colonel. I'm not a young buck of 20. But we put a thermostat in the ground that particular day, and it read 138 degrees. It's the hottest day I'd ever seen. And just as a side note, this was in a place called Ur. And just from a historical standpoint, for no other reason, Ur is where Abraham was born in the Old Testament. And if you remember the story of Abraham, he ended up moving away. And I remember thinking that day, I'd move away too if I was in these kind of conditions. Invisible. But the point that I want to make is I saw these young juntis, these young privates, Iraq Army privates, dragging through the training in that kind of heat. And, you know, we were forcing water. They had some, didn't seem like they had as much as we did, but we meaning the trainers from the coalition group. But I just remember looking at these people. These are young fathers. Most of them were male who had families and had wives and children and were trying to eke out a living. And Mike, to answer your question, I just said, you know what? No, I'm not. It's the least I can do to reach out and try to help these people have a better situation. Afghanistan was no different. You see these farmers getting hooked on opium by the Taliban and forced at gunpoint to raise poppy to turn into heroin. By the way, southern Afghanistan raises 92% of the world's heroin, and it's the good stuff. And you just saw them trapped against a ruthless regime. And I don't know what you need as an American or anybody that's got a conscience to say, you know, I can help these people. There's the least I can do is put in a long day, because in the end, I'm going home. And I saw people give the ultimate sacrifice that didn't come home. But and those are ugly memories that you have to tuck away somewhere. But it's part of just saying, look, these people deserve it from me, and I'm in a position to help. And I don't know how else to put it, guys, than that.
Guy, what is your, so that's for the military. What's your driving force now as an educator?
Well, people have looked at me, Scott, and whether it's true or not, they may just have made me feel good. I've had lots of folks over the years say, you know, Guy, you ought to be in a sales job because you'd be pretty good at it. And I pat myself on the back and move on down the road. I never wanted to do sales as most people think of it. But frankly, that's what I've been in the business of doing for a very long time, 30 plus years. I worked in admissions for a number of years. I started up the internship and career services program, ran it for a decade, and then was in the classroom with students. And if that's not sales, I don't know what is. But what drives me now is to see these young people who come and are lost to some degree. Some of them, some are not. Some know exactly what they want to do, and you just get out of their way. But a bunch of folks, I just see a rewind of a young Guy Hollingsworth from years ago who struggled for 13 years to get a bachelor's degree. And I say, you know, no, don't do that. Don't make the mistake. And, you know, that's what gets me up now. Now I'm at a different level now where I'm not quite on the ground floor like I used to be, but still get to associate with them and speak to them and do some things that help young people move through their education into the workforce And some of them, most of them, hopefully all of them will be very successful. The other thing that I think is a challenge for me, it always has been, and I take pride in it, is when a student leaves here, and you have students in varying degrees, with varying degrees of talent and academic prowess. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lid for every kettle. And you have to find that, or help these young people find their lid. And it may not work, may not be working for Price Waterhouse or Procter & Gamble or Goldman Sachs. It may not be that. I could pick a number and just pick a big company. It may be the local whatever, but that's a driver for me to get up and go, let's do it again. Let's try. And once you've been, I've been spoiled. Once you've been in that business for decades, I don't want to go sell a product. If I have to, I want it to be people, because it's really rewarding. And I love what I do. I look forward to getting up in the morning and working. I've been lucky that way. And I backed into higher education, I'll be honest. Again, based on some things that were going on in my family, I've always said, and I plan to do some writing more extensively in the future. But if I do write a book someday, it'll just be simply entitled How to Make a Living by Default, because that's me. I've done that. But I think it's important to find what you can do well, and then you grab it and go with it. And whether that's happened in my life, I'm not sure, but I've tried to do that, and I've tried to teach others the same thing.
I think that's interesting how you put that. You put that, find what you do well. It's not find what you most want to do, because what you most want to do, you might not be good at. So
it yeah, is, I would love to be a professional golfer, and that's not going to happen this week.
But it's such part, you know, persistence versus tenacity. You know, tenacity, keeping going, keeping striving, keeping pushing. Well, it's the similar with persistence, but I think there's such a difference between persistence and tenacity. And it's all about making sure that you're moving in the direction that you're supposed to be moving.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can have tenacity and be extremely obnoxious and not very good at something. You just can be in the way. You know, persistence is a slow grind, in my opinion. It's if you tried something for a month and look back and said, look what I've done, I'm not so sure that's persistence, at least the way I see it. You know, in the military, they have a term called it's called combat multiplier. And what that means is, when you go into battle, so to speak, you look at what resources you have available to you. If you're the United States military, you have the M1 tank that's the most lethal ground weapon system in the world. And you add to that some Apache warship helicopters. And each one of those combat tools, if you will, toys, sometimes we call them, are a combat multiplier. They up exponentially your ability to succeed. And there's other lethal weapons we could use here too. But I think the other piece of being persistent and successful is you've got to build around you combat multipliers. It's just not me, it's we. I've always wanted to give other people credit, and frankly, it's deserved. Any success I've had, starting at home and moving out to people that are on my team, or I was on their team, it's just not me. Because if it was, I wouldn't have gotten very far. I think you have to build people around you that can help and are part of it, and you give them credit before, during, and after, so that they want to keep being part of that. And if you don't do that, whether it's higher ed or combat or in a sales position, I don't think you're going to go very far. You might have enough talent to do it on your own. Some do, but for most of us that are average, you need to have people around you that can help.
On this week's episode of the Selling Podcast, we are joined with an American hero and a living legend, Mike Williams, and his friend.
There you go.
That's horrible. All right, edit that one out. On this week's episode of the Selling Podcast, we are joined with an absolute American hero and a living legend, Guy Hollingsworth. Guy, you're shaking your head and you're saying no. with all of the listeners here, I absolutely, that it, your stories, what you've done, and even just talking about the dairy farm itself and then wrestling and then what you're going, I mean, all of that is absolutely spectacular. Now, I have a bunch of other questions and like a list as we're going. It's like, oh, I should ask that, that, that. I would love to maybe, if the listeners want, we'll loop them in. If not, I would love to reach out at a different time and be able to ask some follow-up questions. It's absolutely spectacular.
Well, you're kind to say the least.
No, he's trying to trap you, guy. He's trying to get a verbal commitment that you can't back out of.
happy to do so for what it's worth. I you know, for me, people that have tenacity and persistence, I've had some wonderful examples, and many of them wear stars on their shoulders. And I've also had some things that didn't work for me. I mean, I've got plenty of failures that go long and hard. And I think that's part of recognizing, you know, what it, in the end it makes you who you are. I wanted to wear a star and felt like I had done everything necessary to be promoted to that level. And it didn't happen for me. And it's okay. Because what it did, it opened up some other opportunities for me, and 41 years is probably enough. I've seen enough of the ultimate sacrifice by some who had characteristics that we've talked about today that mean a lot to me, and I've tried to pattern my life after, which sometimes it went pretty well and sometimes it didn't. I had a member of my staff when I was a battalion commander. His name was Major Stu Wolfer. Was called to go to Iraq, and his name came up, and he was an augmentee, as we call him. He didn't go with a unit. He went on a special assignment, spent better part of a year, and served valiantly, came home in glory, was a patriot in every sense of the word, came back and was put back on my staff. I put him back on the staff. A few months later, he came back, said, "Guy, I should have done more. I'd like to go back. I should have done more while I was there. I could have done more. I'd like to go back." I said, "Stu, you don't have to go. There's others that will go and should go." And he was really persistent, speaking of that word, about going back. I said, "Well, let's think about it." And he just kept coming and saying, I'd like to do more. I should have. I could, and I could make a difference. And I finally agreed to it, and I signed the paperwork to send him back to Iraq for a short tour. Well, 2 months into that second tour, in the heart of Baghdad, in the green zone, in a little gym that he was working out in, an RPG round came through that ceiling and cut my friend Stu Wolfer in half. And the next time I saw him, or at least the next time I was with him, was in Iowa. And I met a C-130 that landed at the airstrip there, and off came a box with the American flag over it. And I spoke at his funeral. A Jewish boy left a wife and three kids under the age of six because he wanted to do more. I talked to his wife just a couple of weeks ago, struggling still, 15 years later. And, you know, you look at people like that, and there's others, and lots of people could tell stories. Then you say, you know what, that's persistence right there. That's tenacity in my mind. And if you can't get up in the morning and put in a 20-hour day, Mike, if that's what's required, then go do something else. But there's people that have set the standard for me and have given the ultimate sacrifice that you say, I can do more. I can do more with what I'm doing, whether it's a sales job or in higher ed or tied to the military. I can do more. And I think you get up and say, I'd be better today than I was yesterday. And at least that's my mantra. It's tried to be. I haven't always done that. Trust me, I had plenty of days where I just wanted to stay in bed, sometimes did. But I think you have to have that attitude to have some degree of success in life.
As the date of this recording, we're coming off of Veterans Day. Guy, once again, we are, thank you. This is I can't remember the last time I actually got choked up on the Selling Podcast. But your stories, what you shared, the love that you have for country and for people, we're just appreciative of you, your service, and what you're currently doing. It's absolutely spectacular.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Gary. Again, I'm
one little cog in the system. Happy to be part of it. I'd do it all again. Trust me, I would do it all again, every bit of it.
Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Guy, and you are committed to another version.
I'll try to drum up some more stories.
Dinner's on me.
All right. Scott, thanks. Good to meet you.
Absolutely. Good to meet you. Absolutely.
Thanks, Colonel.
See you later.